Welcome to the HMO Experience, the UK's only HMO-focused property podcast, where every Monday, Matt, Jamie and Steve will inform and inspire you about everything to do with HMOs, rent to rent, and how to set up and grow a successful HMO business, whether you're just starting out or you're already on your way.
Hi guys, I'm Matt Harris and welcome to the HMO Experience podcast. I am here with the amazing Steve Mitchell. Say hello, Steve.
Hello, Steve. I was going to go, what's up?
What's up? That's your tagline from now on. We are on episode 25, all about rent collection. If you're watching us, you'll see that there's only the two of us.
What?
Where is Jamie?
So Jamie is currently sunning himself in his budgie smugglers in Tenerife.
Borat style.
Yeah, Borat. So I don't think he's got a mankini, but he's down in Tenerife. And I'm sure he'll tell you all about it when he gets back. Nice. I thought he was going on Love Island.
Yeah, Love Island. That's what you've been telling people, isn't
it? That's what I've been telling them. Actually, yeah, I started the rumour. But he's not with us today. But we wish him well.
Yeah, we wish him well. So look, guys, like I said, this episode we're going to talk about rent collection. So there's a few little areas that we will cover. And to kick us off, Steve is going to go into a little bit of detail with regards to payment methods.
Yeah, so we have tried a number of different things. Yeah. And in the early days, there wasn't a lot of sort of technology about it. It was standing orders. It was direct debits, yeah. But that had to be set up through a direct debit mandate. And that was all kind of faff. So we want to try and keep things nice and simple.
Yeah.
So we actually put a lot of trust in our customers.
Yeah.
And to be fair, because our customer selection process was like really spot on, for the first, I think, 4 years that we started, we had about 1,200 quid's worth of bad debt, which ain't bad over that period.
Yeah.
So I think talking about rent and collection and stuff like that, I think the first thing, it actually comes down to the people that you're bringing in.
Yeah.
Because that is sort of the trustworthiness, the affordability element, all that type of stuff that we've talked about in previous episodes is vitally important. If you get that bit right, then the rest of it will naturally follow on.
Those were some of the questions you asked on the viewing and obviously with the carrying out the credit and reference checks, right?
Absolutely right. I mean, if they don't pass referencing or if the affordability is not there, then that's kind of a bit of a red light to us saying, well, there could be some potential issues ahead.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. But we then started to test some different sort of apps. And the one that I favour is an app called Go Cardless.
Yeah.
So this is a direct debit system whereby as part of our check-in process, and we'll talk about the timings of when we ask for rent perhaps in the next little bit of this episode, but as part of the check-in process, once we've accepted a customer, we get them to we put them onto the Go Cardless app. It sends them a link.
Yeah.
They just click a little button, put in their payment details, and then it's set up.
Yeah, yeah.
The great thing is that if they cancel their direct debit, I get a little notification on my phone.
Yeah.
And we've had that a couple of times where we had a guy joined us and he paid his first rent all fine.
Yeah.
And then on the second one, I got a little notification on my phone saying the direct debit had been cancelled. So I called him up and I said, hey, Joe, I've just seen that you cancelled your direct debit. Is there any reason for that? And he went, oh, what do you mean? I said, I've just got a little notification on my phone to say you cancelled your direct debit. What's the problem?
I can see you.
Yeah. And he said, I did it by mistake. I said, okay, that can happen. No problem. I'm just about to send you a new link.
Yeah.
Can you click it for me whilst we're on the phone? Which he did.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was reactivated again.
Nice.
So, like, it was dealt with in, like, 1 minute 30.
Yeah.
So,
we use Go Cardless as well. It's really easy to manage. And really low cost fee as well. It's something ridiculous. Like,
I think when we get charged £2 per transaction,
something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is quite low. And I think recently they've also introduced taking direct debits from international accounts as well.
Yeah.
Because with some of our housemates, because they're international interns, so they're often from France or Germany, Italy, They will, as part of our checking process, we do something similar, asking them to set up a direct debit, whereas previously they haven't been able to do that. Now, because of the changes that GoCardless have implemented, you know, it makes that aspect of it easier as well, which is good.
The other thing that we do is for ad hoc payments, we use iZettle. So we've got a little iZettle machine, and if there's any damage or keys or replacements or anything like that, Courtney's got a little card reader. I think it costs like 79 quid. That interfaces with an app. We create the products in the app, so key, 25 quid, or whatever it might be. And then if we have to issue a key, she'll go along, she'll take the, get the card reader, put the debit card in, they'll put their PIN code in, and then we hand the key over. So I think a lot of people that I speak with tend to just give keys, so it's a cost, first of all, and don't really have those, that facility, or don't understand, don't have a way of collecting that payment. So I'm always sort of promoting iZettle as a great way of doing that.
So I've used, so we do it slightly different. We'll charge through GoCardless. We'll take a one-off payment for any ad hoc bits like that. But also there's a few alternatives. iZettle's one. I've used PayPal here for card payments. With that, you don't even need a reader. You can just download the app, get a PayPal account set up, and take the payment through your phone. And the only downside I've found with PayPal here is that the fees are quite high.
I was just about to say, I mean, they're
quite expensive.
To me, they're extortionate. But and we've moved away from PayPal for just purely for that reason. I don't know what, I can't remember what percentage is off the top, but we had to charge for a new bed and mattress, and that was, I think it was a combined of about 300, 350 quid. And they took like, I think it was like 30 or 40 quid in fees. It was just like extortionate.
It's like 10 or 12%, isn't it?
So we ditched them. And that's why we go with iZettle, because it's, I think it's like 1.something%.
Oh, is it?
And it's much more cost effective. Plus also, because we've got the card reader, we're actually standing there in front of the person. And whereas with PayPal, they say, well, I'll do it a bit later. Give us a key now, I'll do it a bit later. Well, I don't want to. I don't want to give you the key. Just get out of the way. Nice and easy. So,
That's cool. So there's a couple of options there with regards to methods of payment and taking ad hoc payments. Let's have a go down the road of when you take payments themselves, when you take rent payments, what sort of setup have you guys got?
So I was a letting agent for 3 years for a well-known company. And we used to start in the lettings agency. We used to start the rent on the day that people moved in. Which was okay. Nothing wrong with that. It makes it nice and clean and simple. The only thing is that checking the bank account, you have to go in
every day.
Like to see has he paid his rent, has she paid her rent, unless you've got some sort of automated system in place, which when you start to get a large portfolio is definitely highly recommended. But if you're looking to start out and you've got maybe a 6-bed HMO or a 5-bed HMO and you've got people paying money at different points all over the month, it kind of gets a little bit messy. So what we decided to do was to make a part payment, or what we call an initial payment, and we label it as an initial payment, which is calculated on a day rate. So we take the rent, we times it by 12, we divide it by 365, so we get a day cost, and then we times it by the number of days they're in the property for that first month. So let's say, for example, it's January and someone moves in on the 10th of January. So the 10th of January to the 31st is 22 days. You might think it's 21 days, but you have to count the day that they actually move in. So we would then times the day rate by the number of days, and then that becomes the initial payment. And that's then reflected on the AST as to what their first payment is. And then on the first of the month, we've set up our GoCardless direct debit, and all the rents come in on the first of the month. But here's the thing with doing that. If you set the rents up on the first of the month, they won't actually land into your bank account until the 5th.
Yeah, that's right.
So you've got a little bit of a delay. And if you're all your
GoCardless charge, and then it takes a couple of days to process that payment.
Exactly right. But if all your bills to your landlord or your agent to due on the first, that could potentially create a squeeze on your cash flow.
Yeah.
So either you need to set your go cardless, if you can go down that route, on or around about the 27th.
Yeah.
So it lands into your bank account in time. Mm-hmm. Or you need to set the expectation with your landlord or your agent that the payment's not going to be on the first, but it's going to be on the fifth, for example, whatever that might be.
Yeah.
So just a little...
I'm a little bit mindful of that when we complete on rent-to-rent deals, because I know obviously we take the payment on the first and it won't get processed until the fifth or the sixth. I try to, as much as possible, and it's worked so far, complete sometime after the seventh of the month so that I know that payment has been collected and it's much easier to, you know, do the payout. Totally. So far, I think most of ours have gone from like the 15th until the 28th of the month. So it kind of makes it easier.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, you know, it pays to be mindful of making sure that you watch out for your cash flow as to when you get paid and when X's go out as well.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if I had my time again, I'd probably restructure all of our payments to landlords to go out on or around the 5th.
Yeah.
I want to try and pay it as early as possible because I want my bulk payments going out when all my cash is coming in. So, after the 10th, I want to know roughly
what's left.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's going to be little bits and pieces like Virgin Broadband and British Gas and all the other little bits and pieces. But my 80% of my cost has gone within that first week, so I know what I've got left to manage with.
Yeah, cool. So, look, we've gone through payment methods and timing. Now, I guess, also communicating with your customers or your housemates in terms of payments being taken. I know we're going to cover sort of rent arrears in a forthcoming episode, but just in terms of keeping on top of the cash flow and the rent payment process with housemates, what do you guys do?
Yeah, so I'll paint two scenarios. So what we do now is completely different to what we did when we started. When we started, it was very much a manual process. And we literally had, I kid you not, a spreadsheet with the name of the individual the property in the first column, the name of the individual, then what room they were in, and then we got months sort of going along the top.
Oh, wow.
And when we did our bank reconciliations every month, if room A paid, we'd sort of like put 500 quid in.
Amazing.
And we'd mark it green. As soon as room B paid, we put 500 quid in and mark it green.
Yeah.
Because we set the expectation that everyone pays after the first of the month, we expect by the fifth of the month, everyone to be in.
Sure.
So if we check on the second of the month and we check on the sixth of the month, if everyone's not in, if payments haven't been received, that's when we start our friendly, hey. I'm sure you forgot. I'm sure it's just an oversight. But this is just a friendly reminder to say that your rent was due on the first of the month.
Yeah.
We don't appear to have received it yet. If you can just let us know what date you made payment, we can then go back and check our records.
Yeah.
So this is a softer communication rather than going, where's my rent? You haven't paid my rent? Where's my rent? I want it now.
Capitals. Yeah. Capitals. I'm getting angry now.
Yeah. Oh, and for those on the audio, if you've been listening in your car, I'm sorry if I just made you swerve. I didn't realise the depth of the voice, so apologies about that. But yeah, it's kind of a softer message, like, I'm sure you forgot. Just let me know when you paid and we'll get it all sorted.
Yeah.
And then the follow-on from that is we'll talk in a later episode about if they don't respond to that, then Steve gets a little bit heavy.
And you get angry. You send the boys around.
The badass version of me, which is not very bad.
Come back. We take a slightly different approach. So we have like a housemate schedule in Asana. And in that, we've split up the houses. We've got a task for each room. And we set out those that are on direct debits and those that transfer rent. So on the first of every month, at the moment, I'm going through the schedule. And I kind of know off the top of my head now who I just need to send a message saying, hey, it's the first of the month. Can you make sure that you transfer your rent before the end of the day? Any problems, let me know.
Yeah.
And nine times out of 10, that approach has worked. Some people do it automatically. Some people will pay a couple of days in advance because they're good like that, which is nice. But every now and again, you do get the stragglers that will, you know, they won't respond immediately. But eventually, it does get paid. Like I say, we'll talk about the follow-on process from that in a future episode.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I want to know, you know that rent is supposed to be paid on the first of the month. It happens every month.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason for me to have to chase you for it.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that, you know, sometimes life gets in the way.
Yeah.
So this is me telling you, probably a little bit firmer than the approach that you take. Hey, I'm sure you've forgotten. I'm like, rent is due. Can you pay, please?
Yeah.
I do say please.
Oh, cool. Cool.
But yeah, that kind of process works as well. And then we know, obviously, the direct debit aspect of it. GoCard list is set up and we can see, you know, has everything been processed? Cool.
Yeah.
Has anything failed? All right, the failures we follow up with. I do also think, I know that GoCard list sends out a notification anyway to the housemates or the customers, right?
Exactly right.
So they'll be pre-warned, look, rent is going to get taken on this day.
Yeah.
Which is also a nice little feature of the system. I guess, sorry, go on, you were going to say something.
No, you crack. You crack. I'm getting older. Bits of me are starting to fall off. I've got two more points to talk about customer queue game, but you finish your...
Yeah, no, that's it. I'm done on
okay,
that.
Okay, cool.
So go ahead.
So two other bits. As part of the check-in process, we also issue what we call an opening rent statement.
Yeah,
so
that's what I was going to go on to. Oh, my God, I was going to lead you in.
Like-minded individuals. Brothers from another mother.
I know, right?
So we use a rent statement. We provide a rent statement as part of the check-in. And all that does is it spells out what amount of money is due on what date, and we get them to sign it.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't do this, and I don't really understand the reason why. Because what this is doing is, for me, is psychologically embedding into them that they're signing for their rent. Yeah. I mean, it means nothing at the end of the day. But it's getting them to sign a piece of paper, and I can put a copy of our template in the resources if people are interested in that.
Nice.
So that they can use it and just get the code. The second thing that we do, which is a bit following on from our last segment about if you don't pay, is when we do our viewings, we want to try and be as customer friendly as possible. We want the best people. We want no hassle from our customers. So therefore, we want to create a partnership between us and our customers. And part of that partnership is if you can't pay, for whatever reason, it doesn't matter what it is, I'd like you to tell me in advance. So this is about setting expectations.
Yeah.
And to be fair, most of them do. If they can't make a rent payment, they message me and say, look, I'm a little bit short, but I can pay a week later. Is that fine? I'm like, okay, yeah, fine. No problem. And then we put a marker in the calendar just to check to make sure they go in. But if you're setting that expectation and if you're trying to create a partnership with a customer and you say, if there's any problems, let me know and we'll work on it together.
Yeah.
And they say, well, I've got a problem. Can I pay later? You go, oh, no, can't pay late. You've got to pay on time. It sort of breaks that trust and it breaks that partnership. So we're always of the opinion that if we can try and work with our customers, it's a much better to, if there's a problem, it's better to create a solution together rather than sort of say them and us, because if you're trying to get money out of someone and they really don't want to pay, then it's kind of a struggle.
I completely agree. I think, you know, that the communication element, which is why, you know, the having things like the WhatsApp group that we mentioned before, obviously going through the check-in process and being forthcoming with, you know, the fact that communication is key. Like, inevitably, sometimes things will happen which will mean that you're not able to fulfill an obligation that you've agreed to, right?
Yeah.
But if you're just open and upfront with it, like, then there's going to be, and we as the landlords, as the management companies, whatever the case may be, a reasonable in our approach, then there's no reason why, you know, it all can be settled amicably and everyone gets on with their lives, right?
Yeah.
I think it's taking the confrontational approach.
Yeah.
And that starts from, you know, like you mentioned just before, the process of notifying them when, you know, the rent hasn't come in. I know we take a little bit of a firmer approach, but by the same token, you know, we end it by saying, if there's a problem, like, let us know. Just tell us. If you're not able to pay today, then say so and let us know when you can pay it.
Exactly right. And I think your approach has to change dependent on your types of customers.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we've got an amazing set of customers. I mean, I would go down the pub with any of them and have a beer and go out for a meal with them. And that's the type of person that I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But if you aren't, if you've got a completely different set of customers, or if those types of customers are not in your area, then you may have to be constantly asking for the money, in which case you've got to take a more firmer approach, because it's about the tail and the dog. You're the dog and the customer's the tail.
Yeah.
You don't want the tail wagging the dog.
Yeah.
So making sure that you've got that firmness and the expectations have been set. And I found that most people are reasonable. Okay, you're going to get a bad egg.
Yeah.
But that's part of the reason why you build in your void provisions.
Yeah.
That's part of the reason why now that, because our portfolio is of a certain size, we start to put a little bit as a provision aside for bad debt.
Yeah.
But of course, we've got the deposits and the rent to fall back on, guaranteed rent insurance. So we're kind of covered anyway, whichever way you look at it. But I always think that as long as the customer's a good customer and you want to keep them, and if they fall on a little bit of a hard time or there's a problem, I'd rather keep that customer than have to go through the whole process about finding someone else. Sometimes it's better the devil you know than the devil you don't.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you mentioned deposits just now as a little bit of security. I think that's a nice little segue into a situation, I guess, actually that we came across yesterday on the mastermind course, in terms of one of the attendees saying that they collect the first and the last month's rent as part of their check-in process.
Yeah.
What's your opinion on that?
Interesting. My next comments are without prejudice. So I'm not sure you can do that. I'm not sure you can do that, because with the changes as of last year, my understanding is that you can take a deposit.
Yeah.
You can take a holding deposit, but the holding deposit has to be refunded on move-in or deducted from the first month's rent. And the only other payment you can take is for damages.
Mm-hmm. So the deposit has to be secured,
without saying. So I'm not sure. We'll need to go and check, and maybe in a later date we'll put a clarification.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not sure you can do that. Now, someone listening or watching this will probably offer an opinion, and we'd really like your interaction.
Give us some feedback. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, give us your views on that. But yeah, I'm not too sure, because if you're taking the first month and the last month, that's prepayment in advance. And again, I'm not sure legally where you might stand on that, because if they move out beforehand and they claim that actually it was a deposit, because what we do when we ask our customers to transfer our deposits is in the payment description, we ask them to put deposit in.
Uh-huh.
So it is abundantly clear what the use of that money is for. And then we transfer that out into the DPS scheme who we're a member of. I didn't want to venture an opinion, because I need to go and check my facts.
I think two things from my perspective. I am with the cleaning company, we used to hire a storage facility at Safe Store. There's also a bunch of others, you know, Big Yellow and lock up and all that kind of stuff. But the license agreement there, and it was a license agreement, so it wasn't a lease, so it could be terminable on 30 days notice at any time. But we had a similar arrangement where we were asked to pay the first week and the last week's license fee in advance. And the last week was an ongoing sort of rolling commitment, which thereby acted as some form of security.
Yeah.
Now, when with our first HMO, we started off with license agreements. We didn't start off with ASCs.
I remember.
Yeah, and in that situation, we were also asking for the first and the last month's rent, but this was pre-tenant fees ban. And also, obviously, it wasn't the right way to go given the circumstances. Mm. But that was really, those are the only two sort of scenarios that I have encountered or have implemented that myself.
The ASTs are completely different. There's a lot, well, first of all, they're more regulated. There's a lot more legislation around it. It's, I think what we'll do is we'll look into it, and then we'll put out a little update to the episode, maybe. I wouldn't feel comfortable doing it. Let's put it that way,
sure.
Because there's other ways to do it. You can take a deposit. You can take a guarantor.
Yeah.
You can take rent guarantee insurance.
Yeah.
If you decide not to do any of that, then the question I would ask is, would you want to be taking that person on?
Yeah.
Because it's about the creditworthiness and. Most people will be able to get a guarantor.
Sure.
The policy that we have is if they don't fit into one of those criteria, and if we still like them, we may take them without a deposit, but then we self-insure. So that's a risk on us.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would ask for payment in advance.
Yeah.
I wouldn't either. I just wouldn't do that.
No, it's true. So I think what one of the underlying things for this episode has been the sort of systemization of the rent collection, right? To make sure that it doesn't become a headache for you.
Yeah.
Now, we've gone through a few things in terms of, getting the rent payment day sorted out so it all falls on one day rather than being staggered throughout the month. Having an automated payment system sorted out as well. If you can, having some sort of automated customer or housemate communication in place. Otherwise, just be mindful of the fact that you'll need to do that at least once a month in any case.
When you talk about the communication with, we have WhatsApp groups for the house.
Yeah.
We wouldn't put on the house WhatsApp, hey,
no.
You're 500 quid down for the month. What the hell's going on?
Yeah.
So if you need to do that, that's got to be like,
it's got to be one-on-one.
Yeah,
totally. It's got to be personal. And I also think that needs to, in a previous episode, we mentioned about, the communication that is quick and easy, so stuff on WhatsApp, and the communication that needs to be confirmed in an email.
Yeah.
And I think whatever WhatsApp communication you have with regards to stuff like this, like rent collection or rent arrears checkout notices or anything like that, should be confirmed in an email as well, so that you have paper trail.
Yeah.
I know there's various apps out there where you can download messages and you can, transform it into a PDF, which you can store.
Yeah.
But I just... personally, it feel more comfortable having like email notification as well at the end, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we can put a little the wording template that we use in the resource as well.
Yeah, nice.
So just a couple of few little other bits about the systemization. One of the things that I do is I bank with Lloyds. Every morning I get a text from Lloyds to let me know what the balance is and what the last five transactions have been.
Yeah.
So I'm always keeping on top of on the rent side. Now that we've got a portfolio, we use Arthur Online. Arthur is an amazing system. Check it out. It's probably not worth it if you've just got maybe one or two properties.
Yeah.
But the more properties you get is definitely worthwhile having Arthur, because that all of that rent reconciliation can be done in Arthur.
Yeah.
And therefore, most importantly, you can get other people to do it for you.
Sure.
So Courtney does that for us. I send her the bank download on a weekly basis, and she just goes through and sees who paid, and then she just checks that off in Arthur.
Yeah.
If you get something like Arthur, if they've not paid, it can start to send all the reminders out automatically, so you don't have to push any buttons or anything. It'll happen instantly. But check out Arthur Online and have a look to see what functionality that has.
Yeah, nice. Anything else to add, Steve?
The final word.
Yeah, go on.
Is there is no final word.
Okay, nice. Nice. So, that being said, I hope you guys have found this episode useful. Obviously, we are going to continue the theme in the next episode with regards to covering off rent arrears and what you can do in those sorts of situations. But for now, it is goodbye from Steve.
Cheerio.
And goodbye from me. Just want to make sure that you guys follow along on the Facebook page. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. Watch out for HMO Hacks. because I've completely messed up the end of this episode, I'm going to leave it at that and I'll make sure I get it right next time. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the HMO Experience. Don't forget that all of the resources mentioned in each episode will be available on our website, www.thehmoexperience.co.uk. We regularly update our website with new content to help you along your HMO journey. So make sure you check out www.thehmoexperience.co.uk for more details. Also, remember to join our online community by liking the HMO Experience Facebook page and subscribing to our YouTube channel.